Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me as always is Mr. Matt Caraccio. Matt, welcome.
Paul, I'm really excited to get started tonight. This is the best position group ever to talk about the wide receiver position, and we got a hell of a guest here. So bring him on in.
Yes, we have with us once again on the Saturday Sunday Football Podcast, Mr. Matt Harmon of Reception Perception of NFL.com. Matt, welcome back to SaturdaySundayFootball.com.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me, man. I don't know how many times I've been on the show, but always enjoy breaking it down with you guys. I love everything that you guys are putting out. Been listening to all your episodes with Waldman, with Bloom. You've had a lot of guys, and I'm happy to follow in the footsteps here of my founding football fathers in Waldman and Sigmund.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's jump right into this wide receiver class. Before we really get into specific players, any general thoughts, Matt, just on this wide receiver class as a whole? It's obviously has been a lot of discussion in terms of it's not really a class that's very top heavy with those potential so-called number one wide receivers. Like it's missing those Julio Jones or Calvin Johnson types, even though those are so rare and few and far between to begin with. But what is your overall take on this class as a whole?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked, because this is probably, I've been making the podcast rounds and I've been thinking about this more and more as people have, you know, asked about this class in general. And I think this entire draft class, not just the wide receivers, I'd be interested to get your guys' thoughts on this too. Like, I think this entire draft class is so indicative of like the way the league is going and not where it has been. To me, like some of the criticisms that you hear about certain players, I think like why do I really care about that? You know, because of where it seems like concerns based on where the league has been, again, not where it's going. Like, for example, you know, Baker Mayfield, people say he needs to be, the offense needs to be schemed, the windows need to be schemed open for him. It needs to be a spread heavy offense where he doesn't have to make a bunch of tight window throws. Well, you know, so what? That's what most of the good offensive coordinators are doing nowadays. You know, they're creating those offenses. For like Saquon Barkley, people say that if there's a criticism of him that he doesn't, you know, bang it up between the tackles like 20, or, you know, he's not that guy as a runner. And I'm kind of thinking like, you know, why do I care? We don't ask running backs to do that anymore. And with this wide receiver class, I think, you know, people say that there's really no number one wide receiver, like you're saying, like Julio Jones. And I totally agree with you. I think that's completely accurate. But at the same time, I think the way the wide receiver position is going in the NFL today, And there's a really good quote from Kyle Shanahan that I tweeted out the other day that actually I think kind of encapsulates this theory, is that teams are moving beyond trying to flow their whole entire passing game through one number one wide receiver, and rather are getting a lot of guys, you know, three, four guys that are just able to operate in these highly specific roles, you know, separate really well, be good route runners and disciplined technicians. And they can, you know, you have your deep threat, you have your possession guy, you have your slot guy, and they all can play these hyper-specific roles, whereas not having a number one receiver. So to me, I wonder, is it even that big of a deal? And I think a lot of these guys could actually thrive really early because there are a lot of craftsmen. So I think this draft class is really fascinating in that regard.
Matt, you might as well be singing love ballads to me, because anybody who's a fan of this show has probably heard me kind of like pontificate over this for several years now. I think when you look at a lot of people, let's say in their late 20s, early 30s, late 30s, you know, we grew up on more of a spread game than I think people want to really admit. When you look back to high school was a spread game, and a lot of that had to do with optimizing talent. But if you even go back even further, years, I'm talking like the 60s, I'm even going back to like, you know, Dutch Mayer back in like the 40s, when you're talking about the first spread formation ever created. The whole premise was to threaten horizontally and vertically the dimensions of the field, because you can put more players in conflict. It's the simple thing. You can't put a safety in conflict the same way with a running game as you can with a passing game. So this has been a long time coming. And I think that in a lot of areas in the NFL, I think there was a resistance to it for a lot of reasons. Most of it, I think, was kind of superstition and the concern that without spending a lot of time practicing the passing game, you couldn't be proficient. And you know what? That's absolutely true. If you look at the top passing games in college, when you start talking about philosophies, the air raid, the run and shoot, you're talking about systems that require a lot of time and a lot of equity in terms of crafting your practice schedule in order to perfect those types of schemes. You really have to get the timing of things down. You really have to build on it. Well, at the professional levels, time and equity spent on these things is a matter of making money. So it just surprises me that we took so long to transition to it. And now that we are, I think you're right. I think the premise of those philosophies at their roots, if you go back to Hal Mumme, the whole point of that, the air raid offense, was to incorporate a lot of what BYU and Lavelle Edwards was doing in getting maximized ability out of marginal talent, average guys to perform at above average levels by using timing, spacing, and coordination and rhythm to create opportunities to get yards after the catch. That was the whole premise behind it. And people said that can't happen at the NFL because it's a different game. Well, tactically, it may be different. Tactically, you may not get the spacing you want in the same exact way as you would in the college game because of the field, the hash marks, and whatnot. But philosophically, we're doing it the same now. And why not? It means you can get time, ETA, time to the field, for all these prospects is now significantly altered. Whereas it had to be learning this extensive playbook, now you can build on concepts and philosophies that are already understood from what they've priorly done now from high school all the way through. Even in the peewees, for God's sakes, they're doing it. So I'm right there with you. I think it's a long time coming, and it's refreshing. I think show me the football, baby. Air it out. Let's see it. Enjoy it. There's athletes that can win in space. There's a kid I was just watching tonight from Florida State, DJ Matthews. We're going to talk about maybe DJ Moore tonight. DJ Matthews and DJ Moore, guess what? They're not that different when you start talking about tactically how they're used on the football field. These slot formation guys who can win in the short area and extend plays and create yards after the catch. Good hands, dynamic after the catch. They become running backs immediately. That's the types of players that we want to get the ball to quickly and beat defenses with speed, timing, and tempo. And now we're adding these elements all together, things that have been around for years. So I do think the wide receiver one exists. I do think the wide receiver one that we quote unquote talk about is like any other position, though. It's a guy who transcends scheme, a guy that you can funnel the offense through when needed, but I think he transcends that. And I don't see a guy who transcends scheme. I don't see anybody in that class that does that, where no matter what the down and distance is, no matter what the coverage is, we can throw him the football. I don't see anybody like that. So I think the wide receiver one does exist. I don't think we would ever not give Dez Bryant, AJ Green, Julio Jones the football if they existed in this class. I think we would draft them high. I still think we would run the offense through them, but I think we're beginning to see that from an opportunity standpoint, a cost risk analysis, you may not have to spend that draft capital on that player unless you're damn sure he's that player. And I think that's why people are being a little bit more closely guarded. I mean, people have heard this before, but I mean, we're talking about the game. Yeah. And I love these big conversations because this is what I'm passionate about. I really do love the game, and I study it from a historical perspective as much as I do from a Saturday and Sunday perspective.
Yeah, that Shanahan quote that I mentioned is really instructive, like I said, because he said if you have that player, you know, you want it and you keep it and you use it because it really makes your life easier. But I think we're just seeing teams now, even the way we are, like some of the best offenses, you know, the Rams, the Eagles, the Patriots, all the way that they allocate resources, they're just not focusing on one center of the universe passing guy. Instead, it's about creating. I think the Rams are such a great example. And the 49ers are a good one too. Like, they have a lot of guys that thrive in these specific roles without having a true number one receiver. And I think to me, just this offseason, I'm glad we discussed this, because to me, this offseason does feel like an inflection point in how we have evaluated versus how we will evaluate going forward. And you're seeing, you know, who's kind of caught up to that and who hasn't, because the game just feels, I mean, shoot, it feels drastically different to me now than it did even like 4 years ago when I started, you know, trying to blog about football. So it's just crazy to see it kind of hit right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the Patriots there. I mean, that's really always been their way. I mean, minus the couple years that Randy Moss really put up elite stats, they never really had that guy that they funneled the ball through. And that's why even last year people were caught off guard a little bit by a Brandon Cooks trade, and it only ended up being for 1 year. And then they shipped him out this year. And as soon as he was shipped out, a lot of people started talking right away, would they use all their picks to get Odell Beckham? And I saw right away that wouldn't seem like a Belichick type move to trade two firsts or whatever, plus give him a $20 million contract that was going to pay him more than Brady. That those pieces never fit together when you were looking at the big picture. So let's transition this over to some 2018 actual prospects. We want to start with a guy who I know Matt and I have said for the last couple of weeks that we were going to make it a point in every single episode to talk about him, because we just don't feel that he is getting enough attention in the big media market. For, to be honest with you, you don't see him on a lot of people's top five boards. He's on Matt and I's top five board. What do you think about James Washington? How did he test out, you know, running him through reception perception? What is it about his game that you like, and maybe where you think he could succeed at the next level?
Yeah, I really like James Washington. He was one of the first prospects that I looked at. And I think he was the first one that I wrote up at receptionperception.com. The funny thing about this class too is that, like, so I was on a different show this weekend, and they were asking about my top five receivers, and I've said I'm not ranking anybody this year because ain't nobody paying for the rankings, and if nobody paying for it, I'm not giving it. just off the top of my head too, and I was saying on the other show, like, I got to five receivers and I had left off James Washington. I was like, oh, that doesn't feel right, because he definitely feels like a top five guy to me. But it's just, there's in this class, there's just not a lot of separation between your first ranked receiver or your 10th ranked receiver. There's just a lot of these guys are very interchangeable. But Washington, I do think, needs to be slid up more towards the top, because right away, watching him and charting him for reception perception, he has two clear traits that he wins at a really high level that I think are very translatable to the NFL game. He wins down the field and he wins in tight spaces. He has the best contested catch conversion rate in this draft class, and he has great scores on all of the deep routes. So right away, I think you're getting a Marvin Jones type player, because Jones last year, so much of what he did with Matthew Stafford was on deep throws, and especially on contested deep throws. He's one of the best contested catch players in the league. When you look at the Next Gen Stats top 10 list that I put out, he was number two on tight window throws and deep vertical throws. So I think in that sense, Washington has those traits to translate right away. The question is he ever going to be anything more than that? And I do think there's going to be a bit of a learning curve there. Obviously, coming from the Big 12, we've had a couple receivers the Corey Coleman's, the Josh Doctsons, that have taken a little while. And he's another one of these receivers that I've talked about over the last few years that only lines up on one side of the field. And I do think that that has been part of the reason that some of these guys have had a slower learning curve. But to me, just the fact that he has those two easily translatable traits, that makes me think that I would feel comfortable taking him and knowing that I'm going to get a valuable role player, because, you know, winning on deep passes, that's an important thing, you know, and I think that you get that and then try to work anything else out through there.
Yeah, you know what, Matt, and just so you know, a lot of what I've been doing in the background is I really spent a lot of time really kind of digging into skill acquisition and movement analysis and movement theory and what it is to coordinate your body and learn how to coordinate your body. And it's gotten me into all little rabbit holes that we won't get into here. But there is something to be said about only lining up on one position. The research shows that if you don't have the experiential toolbox in which to draw from a movement standpoint, to coordinate your body from different standpoints, if you don't have that experience, there's a lot of data to suggest that you're going to be at a disadvantage and mm-hmm. you're going to have to learn how to do that dynamically on your own. That means that there's more of an emphasis placed on coaching and development if you're going to have him move around. So that's something that I didn't know if the research would bear itself out or if I even knew that was true, but the research definitely bears itself out in that way.
Yeah, that's really good to hear, just because, like I said, over the last few draft classes, a lot of the guys that have been big time busts, like Treadwell, Doriel Green Beckham, Kevin White, all of these guys have been that one side of the field. Really, the only one that's kind of bucked that trend is Juju. And you could argue that he's plays a completely different role, being more like a big slot receiver instead of lining up on the outside and having to change that physical motion. So that's really cool to hear about the other side of that too.
What's really interesting about Washington, I'm glad you pointed out how he is in contested situations, is I think that's what separates him. I get people who I think are a little bit on the downside of him saying, is he just Torrey Smith when Torrey Smith was his thing once upon a time in Baltimore? But I don't really think, again, I don't remember off the top of my head, but I never remember Torrey Smith being a guy who was great in contested situations. He obviously was a vertical threat, got down the field, but I think James Washington could be more than that. So I'm looking forward. I think the transition will probably take some time, like you said, with a lot of these guys coming from the Big 12, the competition in terms of the defense obviously is a big transition for them. But I'm excited to see where he lands. I think he'll probably go off the board somewhere on day two, whether it's round two or early round three. So it'll be intriguing to see what team he lands on, what quarterback. You know, that could help maybe speed up the transition a little bit, obviously, as always, but that's going to be fun to watch. Let's transition this over to another prospect, and that's Calvin Ridley. Some people's number one. I know for Matt and I, he's our number one. We haven't wavered on that. We didn't come off of that after what some people thought was a subpar athletic testing at the combine in terms of his speed and his route running and stuff like that. I thought that was fine at the combine. I wasn't expecting him to jump well, so I didn't take that too much into consideration in terms of knocking him down. What did you think about his game and how'd he test out in reception perception?
Yeah, before even the combine, you know, obviously I always kind of laugh when people say like, oh, well, you know, I come into this process after the season and I don't pay attention to other people's rankings. Like, give me a break. You're on Twitter. You know what people think about players. And like, especially at the network, I knew, you know, Calvin Ridley was kind of seen, you know, by Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, Mike Mayock as their clear number one guy, you know. And after looking at him for reception, I didn't really see him as that type of player. I thought, again, there was a conversation to be had between is some of these guys like James Washington, DJ Moore, Equanimeous St. Brown, they're right up there. I think I didn't think it was a clear separation. I could still see him being the number one receiver. I just thought, again, you know, he's right there with everybody else. What I like about Calvin Ridley is, you know, the obvious stuff, that he's a great separator. And as I was mentioning earlier, when we were talking about the wide receiver position as a whole, I think that's what's going to help a lot of these guys, the good route runners, translate really well. The guys who have translated well the last few years have been the Michael Thomases and the Sterling Shepherds, the good professional route runners, while guys like Corey Coleman and Laquon Treadwell and Josh Doctson are not those players, then they've taken a little bit longer to get off the map, obviously. So I think Ridley's going to translate really well in that regard. He has the highest success rate versus zone coverage that I've ever charted over the last three draft classes, comes out really well on vertical routes and underneath. The questions that I have about him are kind of like, again, is he going to be that player that I think is more of a long-term number two flanker wide receiver who moves into the slot? Most likely, because I don't think that he was just about average against press coverage in reception perception, which maybe it's size because I think he has good technique. You don't see a lot of him in contested situations, but even when you did on just a few attempts, the results weren't very good. This isn't my player comparison for him, but I could see him having a really similar career arc to his fellow Crimson Tide receiver Amari Cooper, whereas like Cooper is obviously a good player. We know that. But at the same time, we're kind of sitting here going into year four of Cooper's career, like, okay, what else? But that's probably just the unfair expectations with which he was drafted, which I don't think will happen with Ridley. And I think he'll probably be like a back half of the second round pick. And like, if he goes to a spot, like my favorite landing spot for him would be Atlanta to be like a number two long-term opposite Julio Jones and, move into the slot alongside with Mohamed Sanu there at times. I think he would be a great pick there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of Calvin Ridley, and I'm right along there with you. I thought he was probably going to be the best complementary receiver in this draft, a number two long term. So I'm really in lockstep with you, and I think that's kind of what we're looking at is a class of number twos, threes, and fours, and fives. I mean, that's no slight. I mean, these are the glue that win championships too. Let's not we don't have to. We know what this class is in terms of the wide receiver group. Do I think that there are some people that some wide receivers that have physical traits and athletic traits that could end up kind of surpassing what we think they might be? Sure. And I'm sure we'll get to those guys tonight. And one of those guys that I want to bring up right now is a player like DJ Moore. Now, DJ Moore for Paul and I, just to give you an idea, I mean, so far, Paul and I are pretty much lockstep in terms of our rankings in the wide receiver class. I mean, I had Ridley one. He's been my number one since like 6.5 years ago. No, he's been my number one since the preseason.
Back when he was 22.
When he was 15, man, I knew it, dude. He was eighth grade. I knew it was going to happen for this kid. No. we laugh, but there are people that watch that stuff. All right. I think an eighth grader got an offer a couple of days ago. So anyway, he's been my wide receiver one since the preseason. James Washington was ironically my number one prior to that. I actually switch flopped him. That's how high I was on James Washington. But a player that came into the purview this year, really, that I think kind of caught us off guard, is we're going to call him the Josh Doxson of this year. It would be DJ Moore. I think he really catapulted himself up drafts. And not only do I want to know your take, I want to know maybe what your consensus hearing is, because you got ears around the office. You hear what people talk about too. Where does DJ Moore fit within reception perception, and what seems to be the professional feeling on him as well? So I'm just curious. Just go to town. I want to know what DJ Moore is, because Paul and I both have him just outside of our top five in that second half of our wide receiver rank, and I don't know what to say about it other than I'm just not sold 100% on what could be, because I think there's a lot of what could be talking going on as opposed to what is. So I'd love to hear what you're thinking.
Okay, let's go with the second part of the question, which is what I'm hearing. I am pretty confident that he is a good shot to be the first receiver off the board. I've heard that pretty consistently, which I don't think is a hot take. I think that's pretty well established. Like, since the combine, he's been one of the biggest risers. Not just because people have gone back and relooked at him, but also just I think the league really liked him all along. He's actually somebody that I got a chance to interview. I wrote a piece on NFL.com about that. Super, super good chat. Really enjoyed talking to him. I told him about what I thought of his skill set after charting all his routes, which was cool too. That was the first time I've ever talked to a player about that. And I asked him, like, hey, what's your favorite route to run? What do you think is your best route? And he's like, oh, probably the curl route, because you can work man coverage, you can work zone coverage. If it's man, you come back to the quarterback. If it's zone, you find the spot to sit down. That's the route I charted you running most. So that makes a lot of sense. That was pretty cool. Really impressive kid. So I think he's going to check the boxes for the league in that regard too, which is probably just another reason why they like him. He feels like a really safe, easy evaluation in that sense, because he's aced the combine. He's acing interviews. He's from a production standpoint, he's great. He knows one thing that was the most fascinating part about talking to him, I think, was The theme throughout this wide receiver class is that a lot of these guys have played with bad quarterbacks. Some of these guys, multiple quarterbacks. And I asked him about, you know, what is that, what goes into kind of that playing with multiple quarterbacks, and how does that change your approach and everything? We had a good discussion on that part of it. And I think that's a big thing for the league too. So I know he's really well liked in the NFL, and I don't think he will. I think he'll be a first round pick. I would be surprised if he's on the board at 24 and Carolina passes on him. Their interest in him has been pretty obvious. Going on to my evaluation of him, he's a player I liked right away from watching him. And I think it's because he's like the perfect encapsulation of what we were talking about at the beginning, which is the change of the wide receiver position in the NFL. I don't think he's best served as a true outside receiver. But I also don't really care. You know, if he's, again, a super safe player and is going to be, I compared him to Golden Tate. I know that's a popular comparison. Tate has been super productive, again, in a super specific role. But I think that Moore wins in the exact same ways. He separates really well from off-man coverage. Not ideal against press, but again, neither is Tate. He sifts through zones really well, as I mentioned earlier. And he's great in tight coverage and with the ball in his hands. And again, that just feels very, very similar to Tate. So I think there's just a lot of boxes to check with Moore. And the thing that really sells me on him, and I wrote about this in his reception perception profile, is just that he's going to be that guy that gets open really well on slants, digs, and curl routes. As I mentioned, he's going to be that player that creates what I've been calling layup throws for quarterbacks. And I think so many people, so many quarterbacks in this day and age really need that. You know, think about a guy like Cam, again, come back to the Panthers, like Cam Newton has needed that player forever. I think the Cowboys jettisoned Dak Prescott because they want to create more of those. I mean, Dez Bryant, because they want to create more of those layup throws for Dak Prescott. And, you know, the Rams and Sean McVay, that's how they really got Goff going in year two. So I think he's going to be that player for his next team. And I think, again, just the overall safety of his evaluation is really what has me taking a shine to him.
Yeah, I mean, that comparison is something that I know I've brought up here on Saturday, Sunday for a little bit of time, and I love it. I think it's a spot on comparison in terms of his usage, in terms of the different things he could do. He can win vertically. He can win the short, intermediate. You could do like jet sweeps, screens. He's got that body type that reminds me in terms of going up and getting it like Golden Tate. So I really like that comparison a lot. And I think you're right. I think he fills that modern day role of a wide receiver that can do a little bit of everything. You know, as somebody who has looked closely at what the offense Pat Shurmur ran, now that he's the head coach of New York Giants, he used Stephon Diggs in a lot of different ways last year. I can see a team looking at DJ Moore and saying, we're going to do a lot of things that Stephon Diggs did, you know, in Minnesota, and use him in a variety of ways. And I think that's what's going to make him intriguing. I think Dallas is now the spot that I'm curious to see if he even gets to Carolina, because, you know, once Dallas decided to, you know, cut bait with Dez, you know, on Friday, it pretty much put a wide receiver near the top of their board. Like, you almost think that they know they're probably going to have their choice. I guess it's an outside chance maybe one goes to Baltimore before, but they might look at it as, we get our choice of whether it's, you know, Ridley or Moore or Sutton, whoever they fancy the most is probably going to be there. So it'll be intriguing to see if they pull the trigger. And I wouldn't even be surprised if they double dip and in round three or round four come back and get another guy to kind of add to that mix. But let's transition this to another player. I'm going to stay on your comps a little bit in terms of one that I really like. And correct me if I'm wrong, Christian Kirk is a guy that I've comped, I think, since last August to Randall Cobb. And I believe that is a guy you comped him to in an article for NFL.com that I thought it was spot on. And I really think it fits well.
Paul told me that one earlier, and
he's been saying it since eighth grade. He's been saying it.
I just told my editor, I was like, yeah, we'll just rip off this guy, don't worry about it. Paul's not gonna sell me out.
No, not at all. So what is it about Kirk's game that you like? How did he test out? I know he wants to play on the outside. I kind of envision a guy who's gonna make his living though inside, you know, for a team, and he's going to play, you know, a ton of snaps anyway. I mean, pretty much teams are in three wide most times, more times than not anyway. Is he a guy that you think is exclusively in the slot, or predominantly, I should say, in the slot?
Yeah, he's another one that I got a chance to interview. I actually got a chance to meet him when he was coming through NFL Network, and he told me the exact same thing when I asked him about, do you see yourself as exclusively a slot receiver? And he said to me, he's like, yeah, I want a chances to play on the outside, because that he's and his exact words were, because that's where number one receivers play. And I said, bro, that's where number one receivers used to play. and so I was making the point to him that, you know, being in and not like some goofball like me is going to tell a wide receiver what to do. But, I was telling him, like, you know, the slot right now, I feel like, is the spot to maximize for offensive coordinators and offensive play callers, just because you see less press coverage and everything like that. And so we had a really good discussion about that, too. And one thing that just sells me on him was he's one of those guys, like, the more I watched of him, the more time I spent with his game, the more I liked him. And just getting a chance to talk to him too, I think really kind of helped me understand his game more, because when you look at him in reception perception, sub 40th percentile against man and press coverage. But again, you know, that this is what I think the longer I've spent with reception perception too, the last 4 years and 3 years for draft prospects, the less I'm trying to be like, okay, this guy has a bad success rate versus man coverage, so he sucks. No, I don't think that's what this tool is useful for. What I think it's useful for is understanding, okay, here's his score in this. Now here's his score in this. What role do we think he's going to play in the NFL? So I think that because this guy doesn't have great success against man or press, I think, yeah, he is a guy that you're going to want to use in the slot. But he has great success rates against zone coverage, 96th percentile against zones. And I asked him about that. I said, you know, what goes into being a good player against zone coverage? And he just talked about preparation. You know, he's like, it's a mastery of not only my offense, my quarterback, he's another one who played with multiple quarterbacks. It's the mastery of what they're going to do from a timing sense, and it's a mastery of every single defense that you're going to play. You have to be just great at that preparation aspect. And that's just something I really came across impressed with his game from meeting him and just, again, watching him. So he's not a flashy player, you know. I think he's gone kind of under-discussed throughout the process, even though he's pretty well-ranked by everybody. I think if he lands in the right spot, he's going to have a great career as a really productive slot receiver. Now, Paul, I don't know about you, but the reason I made that Randall Cobb comparison is because, just like Cobb, you know, he's rocked up, he's tough. Cobb at his best season was a red zone weapon despite being small, and that's what I think Kurt can be too. He has a really strong 73% contested catch conversion rate. He doesn't see many contested catch attempts because he's not used in that way, but when he's asked to win in tight coverage, he really can. So that's what I liked. I just, again, under discussed, but a guy that I think is going to be really good if he lands in the right spot.
Yeah, you know what? I agree with everything that you guys just said. Specifically, I think the reason why I'm so high on Kirk is because he does have that movement toolbox. There's more variability in his film. When you watch his body move through space, he had to do a lot more. Like, so for example, we're comparing DJ Moore to him for just 2 seconds. I don't think there's too much of a story arc that's that much different than Christian Kirk and DJ Moore. I really don't. And it goes back to what you said earlier about, you know, it's razor thin. And Paul and I have been saying this for a while, and it's just razor thin, you know, between all these wide receivers. I mean, I like Christian Kirk a little bit more because I frankly have seen him do more in a variety of situations than, let's say, DJ Moore. And that's not to say that they haven't won in similar ways, or one hasn't dominated in areas others haven't. I've just seen more variability in terms of what I've seen from Christian Kirk as a receiver. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be dominant. It's just the variation means to me that he has a broader, more depth, in-depth toolbox to kind of draw from, which could make him easily more lock and loaded, ready to go out of the chute, so to speak, after the draft. So sticking along the same
let me go back to one thing you just said there. And I think that those two players are fun to see who likes what better, because so much of this is in the eye of the beholder and what you value. There's definitely a type of receiver, and I think the next guy we talk about is going to be like my type to a T, that I value more than other people. And then there's going to be types that you value, you know, more than I do, or like Waldman or Sigmund, they definitely value different type of players. So I think that's what's so fascinating about these discussions, and especially like, yeah, Moore and Tate, Moore and Kirk probably win in the same role, but they bring like different ancillary aspects to their game that you might like more than I do. For example, like for Moore, it's more of the winning after the catch, the physicality in that respect. Whereas I think Kirk is more about winning those 50-50 balls against zone coverage, where as DJ Moore is more can work against man with the curls and everything like we mentioned earlier. So very similar roles that I think those two guys will play, but they'll do it in very different fashions, which is what I think makes them a compelling discussion. And who what you like probably informs who you like more.
Well, and you know what? That's where I'm kind of trying to, and again, this goes back to what I was talking about earlier, and I get this is not the forum, obviously, to labor over this, but it's where I'm trying to go with kind of the study and discussion and reading that I'm trying to do on skill acquisition as I'm trying to broaden my understanding about how we use environmental information, our own understanding of what we can do physically as an organism, along with what we understand cognitively, you know, about the affordances in the environment and how we can kind of act on those affordances. So there's a lot of things that are kind of happening in the continuum that is a play every step of the way. And I think there's nuance to what guys are doing differently. And I love the variability. I'm starting to fall in love with guys that show me more than less. So that's a snapshot, and it doesn't mean it's an answer. It just means it's a broader discussion. But I mean, moving forward to a guy I think we're going to talk about now who kind of falls into the same areas, and I think you can get him like 60 picks later, maybe. And that's DeShaun Hamilton from Penn State. He's a player that I think is going to be a guy who's more situated to a slot role, outstanding route runner in terms of what he can do from the top of the routes, how he can get separation. Also with his releases, he's very solid. So, I mean, I like him a lot, especially from what I saw at the Senior Bowl and how he's really performed down the line. That's not to say I have him top rated, but it's just to say that he's a player that I think really brings into this kind of modern spread age a very, very reliable receiver who you think could probably get you some yards after the catch. Matt, what was your take on him? What did you think of DeShaun Hamilton from reception perception? Did he pass the test? I mean, what did you think?
Oh, smash the test. I love DeShaun Hamilton. He's another one of these Penn State receivers I like. Last year, Chris Godwin was the same way. And actually, it's funny, you know, they couldn't be, in terms of how they're deployed, couldn't be any more different. DeShaun was like a 97% slot receiver. Godwin was like a 0% slot receiver the year before. I mean, literally, I don't think he took a single snap out of the slot in the reception perception sample I charted for him. But the thing that connects them is technique, is route running. Both of these guys, despite the fact they approach the position very differently, they're both good technicians. And I actually got a chance. I talked to a couple weeks ago, talked to their former wide receiver coach at Penn State, Josh Gattis, who actually got the promotion up to go to Alabama. And he really talked about that, you know, just being, he's like, the way you chart out receivers and the way you display and evaluate them is perfect for what I'm trying to teach these guys, which is being consistent technically and everything. So I love to hear that, and that's why I think I like these guys so much, is because, again, it's that consistent technique. You talked about it with DeShaun Hamilton, great route runner, the best success rate versus man coverage and press coverage in this class. I do think he gets lost in zones sometimes, but it's not a detriment. It's just that he's better against man and press coverage. I mean, he saw 46 press attempts, which is above average, especially for a slot receiver. You definitely see enough snaps of him working against press coverage, having to release off the line of scrimmage. Probably the best route runner in the class, honestly. I mean, you could talk about Calvin Ridley for sure, but I think that's what really sells me on Hamilton, is that technique. He's also explosive. I don't think he's a stiff or anything. Athletically, he tested well at Penn State's pro day. He is kind of that arbitrage play on these Christian Kirk, DJ Moore types that I think he's going to go a round or two or three rounds later. And that's got to be really exciting for these teams. Like, we're talking about Dallas and Carolina as these guys that are looking for more layup throws for their quarterback. If they miss out on the DJ Moore in round one, maybe they double back in round three and take DeShaun Hamilton and probably get like 85%. Or maybe even 90% of that same player. I like him. And I ask you guys because, you know, you hear the narratives on these players, you know, that he has drops concerns. And if you guys have followed my work for years, you know, all three of us have been following each other for a long time, you know, my feelings about drops for wide receivers in general. But also, I didn't really see him as a player that dropped a lot of passes. He had two drops in the games I charted for him. He actually came out really well on contested catches. You see him definitely high, you know, with receiver or defenders tight in his hip pocket, leaving his feet. He goes up and gets the ball. So I don't know if there was like a big moment that he dropped a pass that people just remember that or whatever. But I don't see him as a player with drop concerns. I really don't think he has like a fatal flaw at all.
No, I'm right there with you. I really, honest to God, I think that the only trepidation, I think, and this is where it comes down to the rankings. And like you talked about, I'm glad you're staying away from them. I mean, like, because rankings is a really, really unfair thing. I didn't see hands as being a major issue with him. What I do see is in this class, a lot of guys that live in the same region of space that we're talking about philosophically in an offense. And that region of space can be won in different ways. My question is, are these players, are these athletic commodities going to be maximized when they reach their landing spot? And that's the only reason I don't know where to put a lot of these guys and why I think they're better off left in tiers. But no, I didn't see any concerns with Deshaun Hamilton. It's hard for me not to say he's a top 10 guy. It's really not. I mean, I could say that. I can make an argument for that. I'm just trying to read the tea leaves of projection, which is a very dangerous thing when doing rankings. But unfortunately, it's a part of that process that you're kind of left to do. You're like, okay, I don't think he's going to have 15 touchdowns in a year. I just probably not. Like, you know, so I mean, like you're left with that type of, but as far as being a great route runner and a great receiver, if I were a coach in the NFL, he would absolutely be one of the guys I'd be targeting. I love players like that. I would take them every time because I know he's going to be where he needs to be on time.
Matt, let me ask you a question. I don't remember. I'm assuming you did him last year. I get a very much a Cooper Kupp like vibe from Deshaun Hamilton in terms of their body types are pretty similar, like 6'1", 6'2", like 203, 205. I feel like they're going to be used in similar ways. How did Kupp do in reception perception? And could you see that kind of comparison in terms of, I think I said Hamilton's a guy who I think could come in this year and have a productive rookie season, very similar to Cooper Kupp because of how good he is of a route runner if he gets put in that opportunity. Did Kupp check out well in reception perception last year? That's just like, it's skipping my mind, even though we had you on and talked.
Hey man, we all talk. I mean, there's too many players to keep track of. with Deshaun Hamilton he tested much better against man and press coverage than Cooper Kupp did. I think he's a more explosive route runner. I think Kupp, he tested well, you know, similar to a couple of players we've talked about already. You know, he tested really well against zone coverage. He tested well in terms of catching the football. His contested catch conversion rate, I think, was above the 80th percentile. And I think that was exactly the type of player that he was for LA this year. Again, it's about identifying the role and finding the guy that fits it and putting them in that as opposed to trying to jam them in the square peg in the round hole. And that's exactly what I think Cooper Kupp did as a rookie. You know, separated really well in the middle of the field against zone coverage, was great when he needed to win 50-50 balls, and was just super reliable. And I could see a coaching staff seeing like a similar role for Deshaun Hamilton. But I do think Hamilton is again, better versus man and press coverage, and it just overall maybe a slightly more explosive athlete on the field.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let me transition this, and I'm going to group two guys together just so we get through a bunch more names before we wrap it up tonight. And I've been basically asking everybody about these two together because we go back to that. Is there any wide receiver ones in this class? You know, if so, who could it be? And the guys that keep coming up, and it's because they have the body type, is Courtland Sutton and Equanimeous St. Brown. I've heard you on other shows. I believe you're fans of those. What is it about their game in terms of where they tested out that you like about their game? And do you see maybe one being able to transition quicker than the other potentially?
I like St. Brown more, and I think he would translate faster. You know, he's a guy that when I went in to check him out, he was one that I had heard, you know, wasn't productive and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But then I look and he gets open all over the field, man. You know, on vertical routes, he's checking out with good separation scores underneath, especially on slants, really good, really strong numbers after the catch, really strong numbers in contested catch situations. I didn't find a lot of like flaws in just the way he tested out for reception perception. I think that he is the type of player, a guy that could separate really well on deep patterns and be a big play threat, you know, kind of like Martavis Bryant was when he was kind of at a peak, you know, in that he could make those big plays. But I think we were all kind of you could all see that Brian was on way to developing into kind of a 1B wide receiver. And I think that's the best case scenario for St. Brown. So I like him better. With Sutton, I think it's probably going to be a slow transition for him. He's definitely a big time athlete. You know, I constantly seem to be comparing him to Demaryius Thomas, and because Thomas was more fast for his size, whereas Sutton is more freaky quick for his size, but they both win after the catch. When Thomas came into the picture, he was much more of a, he was much more of a guy that took a long time to get going because he was a raw technician. And I think Sutton is also that raw technical player too. I don't think he's ready to come in and run NFL routes right away. Sutton to me feels like the most landing sensitive spot player or landing spot sensitive player. So he's a guy that, you know, if he goes to Jacksonville at the end of round one, I'm going to be kind of rolling my eyes. Like, I don't know if we're ever going to hear much from this guy, but if he goes to like the Packers, you know, because they need an explosive outside threat, then I think we could see something really good for him. Sutton, I just, there are people that like him more than me. And I definitely see the plus sides of him probably outweigh the benefits. It's just going to take kind of the right combination of variables, I think, for him to hit that wide receiver one peak. Whereas with St. Brown, I'm a little more confident in it.
Yeah, I listen, St. Brown was a guy that out of high school, I had him ranked as my number one or number two wide receiver. And, you know, I really like what he brings to the game. I was hoping for a little bit more suddenness, flexibility, balance, and burst out of his breaks to develop as he kind of matured. That was the only thing I was hoping for. And I didn't really see a lot of that happen. And I think that the comp to Martavis Bryant is actually really fair and actually a really nice one. It's probably the one that I agree with above all, because I do see a lot of similarities to that game, and that does translate. So, I mean, there's no issues there. And I just love everything that we know, and we only know through third-party computer search resources, that he happens to be, you know, he comes from a very, very motivated family in terms of what they bring to the discussion, in terms of just all around education, motivation, dedication. Like, it seems like he comes from that type of background. So I'll take that every day. I'll play that number. You know what I mean? So if there is a guy who I think is going to be a guy we'll look back on and say, why didn't we do that more? Like, why didn't we take him? You know, he could be that guy. I really do think he could be that guy. And I think that that's where I'm just being a little bit stubborn about what I want to see, my own biases, what I want to see at the tops of routes and separation. I sometimes didn't see it from him, but I do like him as an overall prospect. Matt, I'm going to ask you about a guy that I think we share a mutual love affair about, and we may be very different than the consensus. I think there is varying degrees of belief in this guy's game, and that's Michael Gallup. Some people really like him. Other people say he's not much. I kind of say, well, the whole class in general is a bunch of number twos. So why couldn't Michael Gallup be a very good number two? I mean, what do you think of Michael Gallup?
Yeah, he's someone I haven't talked much about. I haven't written him up yet, but he is a player I like a lot. I compared him to Michael Crabtree in my NFL.com article. And the last player that I compared Michael Crabtree to was Michael Thomas. And I could see Michael Gallup. So like 3 degrees of Michael here. I could see Gallup kind of going along a similar path to Michael Thomas, that if he lands in the right spot with a team that really knows how to make best use of him. Now, he's not the same like overly impressive separator that Thomas and Crabtree were, kind of like a poor man's version of these players. But what I think I like so much about Gallup, when you break him down in reception perception, for one, as a route runner, again, I mentioned he's not like an elite separator across the field, but he gets great separation scores on curls, digs, and posts, those in-breaking routes. And that's where a lot of Michael Thomas's yardage comes from. But I think his most, I mean, what just really was hard to get past with him was just the fact that how good he is at the catch point. 27% of his targets in his reception perception sample registered as a contested catch attempt, and he hauled in 80% of them, excuse me. So that was really, really strong stuff. He's great, again, at that catch point, adjusting to the ball in the air, dealing with defenders in tight coverage. It really is, to me, a trump card trait of his. So I think if he lands, you know, again, in a team, in a spot that's going to make use of him, I'm really excited about his prospects. He's definitely kind of like a sleeper to me. I don't see a lot of like national buzz on him or anything. I know PFF has him as their like number one wide receiver or whatever. But to me, he feels like kind of different from a lot of these like slot receiver body types we've talked about as maybe a guy who can win more on the perimeter. Again, especially on those 50-50 balls. There were a couple games, man. Like, I've never seen a college receiver like just throat punch a defense like he did to Nevada, man. I mean, really took it to him. So I'm really excited if he lands in a good spot. We could definitely hear from him again.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think a lot of the things that I like about his game really does come with that competitiveness and play strength. And I see a lot of that in his game at every level and what he does. And that goes hand in hand with his route running. It's funny that you say curls, comebacks, and you're talking about zone. It talks about, I think, again, as we kind of dig deeper into this position as we move forward, it's how certain receivers understand, especially in a world that lives more with matchup zone, which is what we're seeing a lot more in the NFL in terms of defenses. I wonder if there's ever going to be a correlation between people that win versus zone and those that are succeeding in the NFL. Because as we start translating more into matchup zone to match all the different route concepts, I wonder if those secondary and tertiary reads that we're getting from defenders, if the zone success players are having a better success rate overall just because of their ability or attunement to how a lot of different players on the field are moving. To get open in zone, you have to know not only where the under coverage is, but also where the coverage is over top. So I wonder if we're seeing, I wonder if there's any correlation there. Anyway, as we kind of transition more into the final stage of some of these players, Anthony Miller, just what are your thoughts on him as a prospect?
Yeah, I really like him a lot. He's another one in that slot receiver mold. I think he was about a 43% slot receiver in his reception perception sample there. What I like so much about him was he scores out really well against man and zone coverage. Not great against press, which is why I do think that he's most likely going to be a long-term slot receiver. But he kind of gave me like Doug Baldwin vibes, because not only is he a good slot receiver and does what you'd expect out of a slot, separate in the short to intermediate areas, but he's also a guy that wins on vertical routes. The post, the nine, the curl, I mean, the corner, those all checked out really well. And he also wins on contested passes. He's a guy that saw plenty of attempts too. 20.8% of his targets were a contested catch attempt, and he hauled in 73.3% of them, which is a really strong score. So that's why he reminds me of Baldwin, you know, like that combative player that wins on vertical passes, isn't just your typical Jarvis Landry, Julian Edelman type slot receiver, more of like, again, I talk about trying to maximize the slot receiver position, make it more of a weapon. I think Miller could be that for some team. So he's kind of another guy that feels a little bit under the radar nationally, but could be a really good second to third round pick if you miss out on some of the earlier guys. And maybe there's not even that much of a difference between a DJ Moore and a Christian Kirk when you compare them to, Anthony Miller and Deshaun Hamilton.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of him sleeping under the radar a little bit is he didn't do anything at the combine. He wasn't at any of the All-Star games due to injury. So he's kind of been a little bit forgotten, I think, since the end of the year. But I'm right there with you. And it's been something I've been saying a lot. Like, if we for a second talk in terms of like fantasy, I feel like guys are going to go in like the mid to late first round of dynasty rookie drafts. And I'm not sure there's going to be much difference in terms of overall upside as, like, say, DJ Moore, Calvin Ridley. And then Anthony Miller might go late second round or early third round in a rookie draft. And a guy we talked about a few minutes ago, Deshaun Hamilton, like, those guys are going to go there. And I'm not sure there's really all that much long-term significant difference between those guys. It's one of those things that I feel like I'm going to push to take running backs in those rookie drafts and then feel like round two, round three get tremendous value for some of the wide receivers that start to fall. So it's definitely one of those things that it just screams about the lack of separation, really, from almost like 1 to 12 in this class, I think is razor thin with the wide receivers. So let's wrap up tonight like this. There's three names left. And to the casual fan, they may all look at them as vertical threats to potentially, you know, get down the field, make a big play, but they couldn't really be more different in terms of body types and how they come across. You have Dante Pettis, who I think of the three is the best route runner and has more versatility to his game. You got DJ Chark, who played with, again, you brought up the theme of poor quarterback play at LSU, who I think is of the three the most traditional of the vertical guy, get down the field. And then you got Kiki Kuti, who is really like a jack of all trades, I think could be used in a lot of different ways, but obviously has that blazing speed. What do you think about these three guys? Is there one that you think did it test out that Pettis was the most versatile of the group or the best route runner of the group? And is there one of this group that you really like a lot more than the other two?
Yeah, I don't like Dante Pettis. I'm kind of want you guys, if you really like him, to sell me on him a little bit, because he was one guy that, like, I know Matt Waldman likes him a lot. I know a few other people like him too, but I didn't see, I mean, just in terms of perception, pretty average success rate versus man coverage, average success rate versus zone coverage, poor success rate versus press coverage. I didn't see him as like a combative type player that separates really well from tight coverage. He's okay at the catch point. He definitely will. I think like his peak moments, I think people see those and get really excited. I just didn't see him when I think of how many players in this draft class are good route runners. I think there's just a lot more guys that are consistently, and that's what all these receivers that I've talked to tell me, that it's just about being consistent, running the route the same way over and over and over and over again, and being where your quarterback wants you to be, you know, not flashing a great route every now and again, but being that consistently good route runner, snap to snap, route to route. And I don't think Pettis is that guy compared to some of the other players in this class. The other two guys, DJ Chark, I mean, he's I don't know. Like, he's another one too. I think that he definitely, he's a vertical threat, no doubt about it. He tested average or above average on the post, the corner, and the nine. So there's no doubt about it. He's a speedster that can build up and get downfield. He'll win a contested pass every now and again. I wouldn't say that it's definitely not, you know, on the level of like a Michael Gallup, that it's a dominant trait. But he does show some ability to win those contested passes. I liked that LSU ran him on vertical routes out of the slot. I think Anthony Miller, who was talking about earlier, is definitely better at it. So Chark, to me, you know, he definitely feels like a situational player, but there's value in that. There, no doubt about it. I like Kiki Cutie a lot more than Chark from what I saw. I think tactically they present the same sort of problems for a defense that, you know, you're gonna know when this guy's on the field. Like, I gotta respect the full length of the field, you know, horizontally and vertically. But I think Kiki Cutie shows a lot more to develop in those other areas of the route tree. So he's another one that I'm excited. I'd be excited to draft on late day two, early day three, or whatever. So that's kind of my rundown on there. I was surprised so many people liked. I'm not surprised that people like DJ Chark, because people fall for that stuff all the time. But I was a little surprised that Pettis got some of the hype from some people that I saw.
So how do you feel about Tyler Boyd? Let's go and talk about Tyler Boyd for a little bit. I just feel like that's just going to be a running joke forever.
It's nice of you to bring it up. I wasn't going to bring it up.
No, it's okay. We could talk about him. We could talk about... I feel like I need to talk about Sammy Coates. I feel like I need to clean my soul. No, I mean, listen.
Why, man? Don't you know that it doesn't matter if you were wrong? All that matters is that you say it well. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. No. No, that's right. Listen. It's not my fault. It's not my fault.
True. It's not.
They went to the wrong home. They ended up in the wrong home.
They're either hurt or the coaches don't know how to use them.
I have nothing to do with that. I send emails and nobody listens. No. I'm right there with you on everybody. I think Cutie, or however you say his last name, because I always struggle with it, but I think Kiki is one of those guys that I love him in the modern game. I actually see a lot of Jamison Crowder in him. That's a guy that's very similar to me, and I don't think that he has the same profile as Crowder, but I do see them being physical dynamos in a very compact, small body. And when I watched him play, man, it's the first time I've ever watched a wide receiver and said he plays bigger than his size.
Yeah.
He does for me. He does in every way, shape, or form. He's a guy that I've earmarked in hopefully in any draft, except for the one I'm in with Paul, because I'm convinced he writes a dossier on me as we're doing this. He has like a little profile. I feel like he has like little like psychoanalyzed me by now. He'll know when I'll take him. Threw him for a curveball last year, though. I took Kamara too early. But yeah, I think Kiki is one of those guys that he's a guy I want earmarked in every draft, because I think he can do a lot of the tactical things, as you explained, that you can get out of DJ Moore. I think he can also stretch the field the same way you're going to want Anthony Miller to do so. And I don't think he's a bad route runner. I think he's just – I think he's literally physically built to be a better route runner than what he currently is, if that makes sense, because he's built low to the ground, lower center of gravity, shorter legs. He's able to generate more force change direction, wider base. He's got all the different biomechanical factors working in his favor. I see him very much as a Jamison Crowder. I mean, I do see that idea that you can run an offense through him and not be afraid of doing so. So, Matt, I got to tell you, is there anybody that we haven't talked about tonight? Any sleeper, anybody that you haven't, maybe a guy you haven't checked out yet, a guy that you're eager to do, or even if you're not eager to do them, some guys that have flashed along the way, just anything that you've seen along the way? Because we've kind of covered the whole gamut of guys that I think are the most in question.
Yeah, I feel like these are all the guys I have real strong takes on. You know, I'm like we were talking about before we hit the record button here. You know, I'm pretty loaded time wise these days, so I'm not like Waldman uncovering guys from, you know, some colleges in South America or whatever the hell he's getting tape on. So I'm definitely, these are most of the guys I'm intrigued to see a little bit more of. Jordan Lasley, he's a guy I've seen a few games on, and I kind of liked what I saw. Might want to, you know, need to finish up that sample. But other than that, I think, well, yeah, these are most of the guys that I've got strong takes on.
Yeah, I mean, and I really do think that we hit on pretty much the top handful of guys here that are going to be in, you know, selected. The only guy that I can see potentially, you know, you brought up Lasley, who is actually my wide receiver 15. And the only guy before Lasley, or only two guys before Lasley that we didn't talk about tonight that are in play, is one is Antonio Callaway from Florida, who with his off the field stuff, probably not going to be taken until the third day. And then the only other guy that I think maybe will somewhere slide into the mix here with some of the guys there, especially the last three guys I think we talked about, is maybe Deion Kane out of Clemson. So we pretty much hit, I think, on all the guys that have a legitimate chance to go in the first three rounds. And it's possible even Hamilton or Kuti slide to the early part of round four. So we pretty much hit hard here, the guys that are going to be night one, round two, round three picks. Like I said, maybe one guy, Kane might be the only guy that has a shot, I think, at day two that we didn't really cover. And then I think Lasley's a little bit of an intriguing guy that could come off the board somewhere, maybe on round four, and has some uniqueness to his game there a little bit. But it was a really great take, kind of sifting out, talking to these guys, finding out how they tested in reception perception, which really gives a unique spin and look at these guys after, you know, discussing them so much between Matt and ourselves, and then having guests on like Sigmund and Matt last week also. So it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. Obviously, pretty much all of our listeners know who you are and where your work can be found, but just kind of tell them once again where they can follow you on Twitter. If you're working on anything over at NFL.com you want to kind of publicize and push a little bit, just let the audience know where they can find your work.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. It was really cool of you to bring on the most important NFL Network face after you got that guy Ian a couple weeks ago. That was cute that you warmed up with him in terms of the NFL talent stable, and then you got to the real big boys in me. No, but in all seriousness, thank you so much. I love chopping it up, talk players with you guys. You know, if people want to find some of the reception perception work, you can do so at receptionperception.com, where you can see all the rookie profiles. There's a link in there to purchase the ultimate draft kit, where you're going to get access to all the NFL player data. You know, Juju Smith-Schuster, guy we've talked about, Dynasty owners probably intrigued where he stands. He's someone that I just finished working on today. Robert Woods, you know, Dez Bryant, all these guys are going to be in there. And yeah, that's kind of the main thing I'm working on right now. So yeah, and if anybody out there is listening to the show that's just now tuning into Paul and Matt's work, definitely keep checking them out. They're really sharp and actually know what the hell they're talking about with prospects before big goofballs like me come in and try to steal the limelight at the end of the process.
Well, that's because you didn't know about Tyler Boyd.
I think I knew.
That reception perception thing is just an amalgamation of nonsense is what it is. Okay. I can put numbers in a place too. Okay. No, Matt, thank you so much. It's really a fantastic time. And I think everybody out there can hear it. Matt is one of the most humble, approachable people that you'll ever see out there in terms of his quality of work, but also in terms of his engagement with people out there on really Twitter and social media. He's one of the best out there, one of the brightest, and it really is an honor to have him on every year. Matt, thank you so much. And Paul, just in terms of the content that we're providing out there, if you haven't had a chance to go back and listen, we had Matt Waldman on last week. As Matt talked about, we had Ian Rappaport on last week. We had Sigmund Bloom, all from Football Guys, Reception Perception, NFL Network. We're bringing on the best and the brightest in terms of Matt here with Reception Perception. I mean, if you haven't had a chance to go back and listen, please do. Download, subscribe. And if you haven't had a chance to check out our premium content, please do so. We have over 150 or some odd players basically profiled for this upcoming draft year. We also have the 50 freshman notebook prospects that I went through and watched a lot of home movies for. So there's a lot of interesting things there to look at for the incoming freshman class. And then, of course, Paul is going to be debuting soon, Paul, right, in the next week or two.
No, it's almost, just to jump in there, it is almost done. We're talking probably within 48 hours, it's going to go live.
Done.
So the draft projection notebook, the finishing touches. Now, I will do a lot of updates on it from when it goes live until literally minutes before the draft starts. But it is ready to go. The fourth and final notebook, a tab for every single position, offense, O-line, defense, how I expect it to come off the board. And then with all their metrics, if they ran at the combine, if they didn't run at the combine, just height, weight, their best pro position. So, you know, if it's a, you know, safety, free or strong, if it's a linebacker inside or outside, if it's a guy on the D line, is it a defensive tackle or a five tech? Every single position by tab, and then a overall projected top 32, top 100. And then my guess, I'm putting the finishing touches on the 256 picks that I think will be selected. We will see if we can get to 213 this year. 212 was the number we got last year, so we'll see if we can top it this year. But it should be live by the middle of this week, Tuesday or Wednesday. It's going to go live, so people will have about a 2 full weeks before the draft to really dig into it. And then, like I said, I'll be making continuous updates to it over those 2 weeks as well.
Yeah, we're really flattered by all the support we recently got. And it really is a great package. It's something that, you know, Paul and I put our heart and passion into. And we love the game. We love the game, and we love really studying the game. And as you can hear, we're always trying to improve and always trying to better ourselves. So for everybody out here, for everybody here, Paul, Matt, myself, thank you so much. And please join us next time as we take you from Saturday to Sunday.